please.
I'm Ms. Florence Meyer, and I am speaking on behalf of the bill. Our daughter was killed, obviously the third item from the paper. Mary Jane Meyer, a 16-year-old junior at Sandy High School, was killed early last Friday evening. This was in January of 1964, when her car was knocked into the path of an oncoming truck in an intersection of Highway 22 and 26 near, Highway 212 and 26 near Orion. The small foreign car was she was driving was crushing beneath the front end of a tractor trailer lumber carrier. She was pronounced dead at the arrival of Christian Hospital. The girl was driving home in her in Boring area from her after school job in Sandy. She recently was taking a part time job in the office working for Judge Holwater. State police said that her car was westbound on Highway 26 and was stopped at the Compton's Corner intersection waiting to turn left on Highway 212 when it was hit. Police said her car was struck in the rear by an auto driven by Frank Clifford Banta, 46, of Route 1, Sandy. Banta was arrested and charged with driving while intoxicated. He pleaded innocent to the charge Monday in Clackamas County District Court in Oregon City. He was released on a $300 bail, and the trial was set for February 18th. The truck driver was Banta of Prinedale. The force of the crash burst open the 75-gallon diesel tank on the truck.
I would like to, I'm Lauren C. Meyer, cousin. We operate a small dairy in a Boring area. And I would pass this around for the committee to see pictures. This man was a known alcoholic. He'd had his license back 30 days from his previous relocation for drunken driving. He was under surveillance by the officers, state and county. When he submitted to the breathalyzer or whatever they test their use at that time, 4 hours after the accident, he still had a 0.3 alcohol in his blood. Reading, he was maintaining his innocence until the night before which comes to trial, which on a deal, he pled guilty and received a year sentence, which was minimal. The maximum would have been 3 for negligent homicide. I'm for all 4 of the bills. I realize that there's improvements to be made and we can find fault with them, but I'm sure that they're better than what we have now. Incidentally, this man subsequently had 3 more driver's licenses after this accident under alias names. And I think that's all I have to say. We're just a statistic in the slaughter on the highway. And come home real hard and close to us. It happens every day with many others. You read the headlines and you think it couldn't happen to me, but one day you wake up and find out it did. I have no cure. I have no solution. We have to get them off the highway if they're going to drink. So, are there any questions?
Anyone have any questions of Mr. and Mrs. Meyer? Thank you very much for coming. We appreciate your coming. Mr. Miller?
Madam Chairman, I'm John Miller from Lebanon. I feel reluctant taking your time here. I just represent myself as a private citizen. But it has been a terrible thing for me to listen to all of these woes and troubles and problems that have arisen over this one problem that we have. It makes me wonder how long our lawmakers or authorities are going to dawdle along until vigilantes come along to enforce what should be have been enforced years ago. We quibble over different punishments, or whether it should be the second or third or the tenth conviction before we crack down on them. Of course, anyone can have an accident, but where we know the 4 to 7% of the drivers are causing up around 90 or 95% of our driving problems, it seems to me that somehow, some way, we could be able to remove them from the road. I was just down during the intermission and listened to the Linn County District Attorney suggest to this other House committee that he believes that we're going to have to solve this problem by having everyone who doesn't drink, who drinks, not drive. We're quibbling whether it's 1.0 or 1.5 or whatever percentage there is. It seems to me that we're going to have to go completely the whole way and demand that anyone who drinks not drive. It seems like this movement is sort of sneaking up on the drunken driver. All of the other great movements in our society go overboard. The pendulum swings from one extreme to the other, like our pollution and ecology and the like of this, the fights. They go perhaps too far in lots of places. Seems to me that we've come to the place where we should go too far in this suppression of our drunken drivers, because after all, it is a privilege to drive. They don't have a constitutional right to drive, and it was suggested by one of the attorneys that the law doesn't give them a choice to refuse a breath test, that when they take out a license, that it implies that they will submit to a breath test. So when our smart boys get caught and refuse a breath test, why, they should be punished for that, because they're breaking the law right there.
Well, they are under present law. If you don't take the breath test, you lose your license for 90 days.
Yes, and that's the least, a good deal less than what the law would call for if they were convicted. So it's the easy way out. Now, my only suggestion is, I mentioned it to a committee last week, is we've learned since that they can impound the cars under present law. But I feel that if they would make a big movement of this sort to advertise that the next time a drunken driver is caught, he's going to lose his car without any chance of remuneration, without any remuneration for the owner or the one that has the loan on it, that this would make a big a big difference, and it would widen the responsibility. We would get away from this thing of a man having a wreck and being without a license and insurance and going right out and buying another car, because that dealer would be interested whether he's going to lose that car or not. The way it is now, all he's interested in is making the sale. So I believe, the more I think about it, that this would be a logical solution. In fact, when I testified before a committee last week, the chairman asked me, well, what would I do if I loaned my car to a fellow and he went out and got drunk, and would you lose your car? Well, if it applied, I think that would be the thing to do, because it would make me more interested in who drove my car. And certainly it would be true of the insurance companies and the finance companies who have a dollar stake in our driving. If they had a dollar interest in it, it would certainly make them more interested in whether these people kept on driving.
Questions of Ms. Miller? Thank you for coming.
I know this is a harebrained scheme, but I'd like to have a thought about it. Thank you.
Carl, are you here on a bill?
Yes, Dale Kahn from our office. Sir, I would like to testify on the bill. Are you carrying them all and stuff?
Well, we're still carrying over from 1 o'clock for just a minute. Which one did he want to be heard on? It's 791-407.
574-570-563. I didn't sign up for it, but I want to talk to you.
Oh, well, that's it. We're hearing. Come on up, then.
Madam Chairman, I'm Dale Kahn, Deputy District Attorney for Multnomah County. Presently, I'm in charge of the driving under the influence section of that Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. I'm here specifically not to talk about the policy and the law, but basically to talk about, number one, I'm Senate Bill 563. Is that the one you're discussing right now?
Go ahead. We took the night of group.
In this proposed amendment to 483640, it would be our position that the subsection 1 of that proposed amendment would be a derogation to the philosophy or the theory that the district attorney's office is proposing in a House Bill 2901, which does away with the problem raised in this subsection 1 here relating to not commenting on the refusal to take the test. We researched the law and found federal cases holding that it's constitutional for the prosecutor to comment on the refusal. It's also constitutional for the court to instruct the jury on the refusal. And as a tool for prosecution, in addition to the suspension of license, if that provision continued, we feel it would be a prosecution tool of invaluable weight. At the current time, we're having probably 50 jury trials a month. And we, by analyzing the jury trials and talking to jurors after the jury term is over, we determined that jurors don't understand why some of the time there's a breath test and some of the time there isn't. We feel they're entitled to know that, since it is a matter of constitutional right of the state to do so. It's not infringing upon anybody's rights on the theory of the implied consent. So for that reason, we feel the subsection line of Senate Bill 563 should be deleted. That happens to be a proposed amendment to the current 483640, which relates to who can analyze blood in Oregon. Excuse me. And in subsection 2 of House Bill 563, they change some of the language of the current 483640 by adding licensed nurse or hospital laboratory technician. It would be our suggestion that subsection 2 becomes subsection 1, and that the language that's contained in 483638 should be included therein, which gives the defendant the right to obtain a chemical test of his own from any licensed physician and surgeon, comma, licensed professional nurse or qualified technician, comma, chemist or qualified person. Now, I can't see any reasonable distinction in the law why those people should be able to analyze a chemical test taken at the test of the defendant, and the same type of people shouldn't be able to analyze the test taken at the behest of the state. And what it really amounts to is placing chemical analysis and the common law requiring the court to see to it that whoever is presenting the evidence merely qualify their person as an expert capable of making that analysis. So,
what percent of people who are arrested for DUIL do you think refuse the breath test?
I can't give you a percentage figure, but it's extremely high, and it's growing. We're dealing with something like 4,500 arrests per year, and all these files cross my desk, and to me, it's pretty obvious that there's an increase. And
what would you say, 50%?
I honestly would not want to state a figure, because that's a statistic that I just haven't even attempted to keep.
Senator Keithburn.
It increased dramatically after our last legislation on the 0.15 second violation, is that correct?
I couldn't relate it to any particular term, Senator, because I took over the DIL section after the 1-5 law was already in effect. However, since I've been there, which was starting in June of 1972, I see a tremendous increase in refusal cases now. It's pretty obvious, and in talking to defense lawyers, you will find probably 99 out of 100 now will instruct their defendants to refuse tests in all cases because of the tremendous difference. You may lose your license for 90 days on if you refuse to take the test currently. That can't be used against you, and currently in the trial, and it enhances your chances of either defeating the state in the drug driving under the influence trial or getting your case into a state where it may be negotiable to a lesser charge. So,
Senator Keith Burns.
While we're on that point, you know, don't you think it'd be desirable to encourage people rather than to discourage them from taking the breathalyzer?
Certainly, I think it would.
Then why wouldn't it be better to take and just make a different degree of punishment for .15 rather than make it a separate offense and having the breathalyzer being search of the sole evidence?
I don't think that those two necessarily follow. I think that the .15 charge happens to be the one of the greatest weapons that we've got in plea negotiation under a DYL charge. I don't think the fact that you have a 1-5 charge relates to what our office is propounding, is that everybody be required to take either a breath, blood, or urinal test, as they are currently required to do under California law, and which was upheld in a United States Supreme Court opinion in Schmerber, and as late as 1969 again in Mitski, wherein the court held that you could physically forcibly take chemicals from the body of a person, it was constitutional, and then you get into the extremes of reasonable force under the due process clause. But as far as the United States Supreme Court is concerned, why, you can absolutely require a person to take one of those 3 or 4 tests, and in addition, provide, as California does, that if they refuse to take the test, they can have a year's suspension of their license, or 6 months, or whatever, and that the refusal can be used in evidence against them, and the court can instruct on the refusal. Now, as far as I'm concerned, these are tools that enable the prosecution and the courts that have these tools to certainly present the situation to a jury in a much more realistic manner than we currently have when you cannot comment on the breath test. We had, this last 10 days, we had 3 mistrials granted because the police officer inadvertently said breath test when asked a question, and you give me some other tests, something like that. And as far as we're concerned, so long as it is constitutional, we would like to see that approach taken.
Senator Keith Burns.
Well, a lot of things are constitutional. We don't do because they aren't as practical as other methods. If you take and have the same penalty for having a .15, but have it different than for a .10, as we have now, except that the sole proof you have to have on a .15 is a breathalyzer. If you just did it that way, then you would not discourage people from taking the breathalyzer, which you're doing now, and therefore to make conviction easier for both your DUIL, straight DUIL, and your .15, isn't it?
Well, I feel that we're probably just not communicating. I don't see any distinction between taking a breath test for driving under the influence when you have a disputable presumption at some particular level, whatever it may be, and the fact that if you consume the volume to the point that you're at another level, it's a different, separate crime. If you were the recent, most recent Court of Appeals case in Flaringen, drew it fairly clearly into scope. Driving under the influence requires proof of a perceptible amount of physical effect or mental effect, where the .15 charge does not require a perceptible visual effect that can be seen by people of ordinary learning. And it's extremely important to us in the prosecution because the heavy drinker that reaches 2.5 beat us regularly on our videotape.
I reach a 2.5?
That's right.
They don't beat you on the 1.5.
The 0.15 or over cases. We lose those cases. Fairly common to lose those type of cases where there's a videotape and you don't have the 0.15 charge.
Yeah, but you're double barreling them all now, aren't you?
Yes, we are. But this is what I'm discussing with Mr. Keithburn. The current time, we do have separate charges, and we do try them both together. If you have one charge of DYL with an enhanced penalty for over 1.5, you first then have to find that they're perceptibly affected.
Right.
And we we have great difficulty. Before we had the 1-5 charge to prove that they were perceptibly affected, quite often we were unable to do so. Then this legislature come along with a 1-5 charge, 0.015 charge. Now, I've forgotten my statistics, but it's something 3-1 when we try them both together, and in cases where the jury has found one guilty of one and not guilty of the other.
Which one do they find him guilty of?
0.15 or more.
Do you ever lose them both?
Well, 1 month we lost both charges. I didn't bring my statistics right. We, of all the times that we tried them, two charges at one time, we lost, in 1 month statistic, we lost one case, both charges. We usually win one or the other. We win the 0.15 charge 2-1. The jury compromises away or finds them not guilty on driving under the influence. And we'll find him guilty at the 0.15.
Well, I want to ask, Madam Chairman, I don't want to hold this up, but why do you join us? Why don't you just try the 0.15 first?
Well, because State versus Brown held that if we tried one or the other, it's a bar. So we have to try all cases arising out of the same set of circumstances at one time, or you have a double jeopardy problem in the first place. In the second place, if we try them both together and win one or the other, that's all we're after anyway,
right.
One conviction.
Right.
And to have two trials,
I wasn't aware of the Brown case.
Well, the Matt Brown case is a fairly recent case that held that all charges arising out of the same set of circumstances must be tried together, or else you have a double jeopardy problem, which is giving us another nightmare.
Wouldn't it be just simpler if there was one crime, 0.10 or more?
No, it would not.
And make that a new offense, just like the 0.15, and prove that if a person had a blood alcohol of more than 0.10, then he was guilty of this offense, without regard to the business about, you know, the DWI test.
No, because you're finding the greatest number of people now going through our program are not taking the breathalyzer or any test.
And they lose their license
automatically. All right, so they lose their license for 90 days, which is really kind of insignificant to the fact that they don't go on, it doesn't go on their driving record that they're convicted, so that they don't get into the 1, 2, 3, 4 times for years of suspension. They're also, they're not fined or penalized in any way. All they've done is lost their license for 90 days.
Well, does California enhance the penalty if you refuse to take the breathalyzer? Did I hear you say that?
Well, California is two different things, just like it is in the current law in Oregon, except that in California it's mandatory that you take one of the three tests that they offer. You have your option. And if you refuse to take one of the three tests, you then lose your license currently in California for 6 months.
Does it go on your driving record as
a refusal?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can they also, I'm sorry. Well, I just wondered, you know, I said, why not just have one crime, lower the blood alcohol content, and you said, well, because people won't take the test, well, then let's enhance the penalty for refusal to take the test and change the motor vehicle law to provide that if they refuse to take the test, it counts on their record the same as a conviction for drunk driving.
And I don't think you could legally do that. I don't think you could legally penalize somebody as a crime, as a conviction for a crime, for refusing to take a test.
Well, I think...
Well, we already do.
Yeah, sure you can, because
you suspend their license if you don't come down to being convicted.
Well, but it's a license situation.
They are all licensees who act at the will of the legislative will, just like we could change tomorrow the age to make people ineligible for a license until they're 18 or 21. So I think we could write into the motor vehicle code the proscription that you say we don't have now civilly without calling it a crime, if it would have any perceptible effect on diminishing people driving. I mean,
I honestly don't think it does, but that's my personal opinion, not of our office, because of the prior discussions you've heard here of people that have been convicted 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times of driving while suspended, driving under the influence, 2 or 3 times mega hom. Those people drive whether they have licenses or not. Some segment of the population that will abide by rules and regulations would be governed by this type of law, but it certainly wouldn't be an all-covering law, treating everybody on the same basis as the current situation we have now, that all I'm proposing is that you help us get the tools in a position so that we can use the ones that are available.
Well, you're testifying in support of the bill that was under discussion in the Alcohol Committee on broadening the option to permit drawing blood.
Yes, our office is in support of, Mr. Hawes testified in support of, that is our bill that we've asked to be entered.
How do you get around the Christian Scientists or the Jehovah's Witness?
Well, because you give them an option of the Christian Scientists, like the California law, has two exceptions. It doesn't even have religion, but they have two exceptions. One is hemophilia and the other is a person under prescribed coagulant, heart patient under coagulant medicine. You get around that by giving them an option of a urinalysis, breath, saliva, or blood test. So if it's a person that has religious reasons for not allowing their blood to be taken, it's pretty difficult to have religious reasons why not to have a urinalysis test or a breath test.
All right. Well, one final question, Madam Chairman, and that is the bill in that other committee that I had to step out of here to go in and hear, which purported to replace or to mandate the blood test, I think that would actually diminish the effectiveness of law enforcement, because you've got a lot of places in the state where you have in the sheriff's office or the police station a breathalyzer that an officer can run, but your accessibility to a registered nurse or a doctor to withdraw the blood is more limited. And
I would certainly agree with you in that regard, except that I would certainly feel that a tremendously large percentage of the people that you'll be dealing with will be in the metropolitan areas in the first place, so you'll have all of these things available. The people in the less sparse counties where you have medical problems or accessibility to medical people, there again, the great percentage of the people involved that become involved in this certainly are going to opt out for a breathalyzer or a urinalysis or a saliva test long before they're going to want to go and have their blood taken. Now, dealing with numbers, and you're dealing with, like, so right now, we're dealing with over 5,000 cases a year in Multnomah County.
You don't have that many cases in 10 years in the rest of the state, probably.
Then when you do get out to those areas, they have doctors available. It may be difficult if a person really wants a blood test. I'm sure that it could be obtained. But I think the people that would really insist on a blood test in preference to one of these other easier tests would be minute.
Further questions? Senator White.
Somewhere or other, I didn't quite get your comments about the California law. Do I understand that the California law requires a blood test or urinalysis or breathalyzer? And what is the penalty if you don't do it?
6 months of license suspension.
Well, it's the same as Oregon, only twice as much.
The same as Oregon, only twice as much, except that in Oregon it's permissible, and you have a right to refuse. Privilege to refuse, created by statute. In California, you don't have that. And the federal court, in construing the California law, has construed it to be absolutely mandatory, even to the point of forcibly taking blood from a person, up to the point that you can get beyond due process of law, physical fight.
Well, excuse me, I'm still confused. If it's mandatory, but you can refuse and then get 6 months, I don't quite get that.
It's mandatory that you take it.
Huh?
If you refuse to take it, you can be forced physically to take it. However, in our society, you reach a point that you are being unreasonable by the Fourth Amendment due process of law. So when you reach that point, there's always the area of people saying, I'm not going to take it, and you're going to have to force me to. As a policy, policemen are not going to rational people down to the ground and take their blood. So those people lose their license for 6 months to take it. Plus, the prosecutor can comment on their refusal in court to the jury, and the court gives an instruction.
The real difference is that what you just mentioned. Outside of the exit in 90 days.
Those two differences are tremendous to us.
Further questions? Senator Keithburn.
Well, I would hope that Dale would leave here without answering one question we have, but we put to other people and probably have more experience in prosecuting and handling people than drinking and driving anybody in the state of Oregon, I guess. But is there any way in the world that you keep the persistent drunken driver from being behind the wheel of a car?
No. I'm certainly not qualified to state any of that type of thing, and I'm not here for that purpose. I probably would philosophically, personally agree with the last man that testified. But if he's going to do it at all, you should say anybody who drinks shouldn't drive. But I don't have any miraculous answers of how to keep people.
Well, you haven't considered impounding cars, taking license plates, various other things?
We have an impounding provision, which has never been used for the DUIL. We do use it on the driving while the suspended situation arises. In fact, it was in the last 10 days that we proceeded and impounded the car of a friend. And in that particular case, we were successful because the friend took the stand, I don't know why, and said, yes, I knew he was suspended when he ran the car, so we impounded the car. But generally speaking, when that problem arises, you're not dealing with a person driving his own car.
Senator John Burns.
I think you're doing a terrific job. I've been handling some cases that made my office have been, and they're just getting impossible to win. I have this, and I think that's good, really. So I'm really proud of the way you're operating your program, and I have the feeling that, and maybe I'm wrong, are you seeing, you know who these guys are because you can cross the board here. Is there less recidivism now? Are the same people coming in front of you more infrequently now than in the old days down at the station? Or is it impossible to?
Well, we get people that are repeaters. I have a letter here from Mr. Hodge just got on one. I think it was his fifth or his sixth conviction. But I don't think that our recidivism rate in Portland is all that great. You get into the philosophical discussion of social drinkers versus the heavy drinkers and this type of thing, and by far the majority, bulk of the people that come through that program are first-timers. Great, great majority. If they people that are processed, that's their first time. And
further questions of Mr. Kahn.
I just want to be sure, Madam Chairman, that we get the benefit of this advice here. I understand that you accept Section 2 as it's written. For
No, sir. I think that Section 2...
Oh, you want to add on that the own doctor, everything that the own doctor can do, the state can do.
Yes, that's right out of 483638.
Yes. And then in Section 1, you spoke about the references on line 9 and 10 to the ORS, and you said that it did violence to a hospital plan. I don't want any.
That's correct. All Section 1 is doing is preserving the inability, as I read it anyway, is preserving the inability to make comments on the refusal.
Does 2901 have the California provision?
Yeah.
Hospital
2901? Hospital 2901 is a limited view of the California. It does not contain the suspension provision. The bill that we proposed does not contain a provision for suspending the license for refusal.
Further questions, Mr. Kahn? Thank you, Mr. Kahn. Where is the Gramsci Act?
It hasn't come up for hearing yet.
What committee is it in?
It'll be before the alcohol and drug committee.
Mr. Kahn, you wanted to...
If I may, there's a couple of other bills.
All right.
Senate Bill
354.
Let me ask you a question, Dale. What... Are you going to have more cases as a result of this batch of laws? You're going to have more cases?
As a result of these laws?
Yes.
Absolutely not. We're going to be able to handle them more efficiently, but it's not going to create any more cases. We have the cases now. It's just a matter of getting the proper tools, which I think fairly, before a jury on the issues that are already there. We have over 50% of our cases. I'm sure over 50% of our cases do not have these tests in them. If the law was made to make this mandatory, more people would take the test,
and we'd be able to handle it more efficiently. In regards to this other bill, the 563, this would, all that does is clear up a question of who can analyze the blood. And under the implied consent law, it's required that the people, the only people that can analyze the blood to bring into play the presumptions that are created are people that have got a permit from the Board of Health. Well, under hundreds of years of common law, any qualified person can create this type of evidence. There's no reason why it shouldn't come in for the state, since it can come in for the defendant already under this 483638. Why are you saying that that bill, I think, should make those equal in that regard? And this section one, it just, for all it does is preserve this right to this refusal thing, not coming on a refusal.
Yeah, that's the old law. Now, what other bill did you wish to speak to?
Senate Bill 354, which is regarding allowing a presumption to arise if a breath test is taken within 2 hours of the time of arrest. Now, that's derived from laws from other states, and I can't quote you which state. This is another a bill that we asked to be presented. However, I believe that in subsection A, B, C, and section 3, at the end of each one of those sections, there should be a comma and the word "at the time of arrest" inserted. Mm-hmm. And then in each of those sections, the word "then" be deleted. The way the law is right now written gives rise to a presumption that a person is under the influence that at the time that the test is taken, when the law reads that he has to be under the influence of time of driving. As I read the intent of this bill, what the reason we wanted it in was to do away with some of the smokescreen defense tactics of getting involved in, if he took the test at 1:30 and he was driving at 1, was under the influence at 1. And under the recent Court of Appeals case, there was a 33-minute lag, and the court held it was just common sense that the legislature meant it must take some time before a person could get someplace and have his test taken. And instead of having the whole trial evolve around the period of time from the time he was stopped or blew into the test, if that time is limited, and here they've chosen 2 hours because, like I said, it was another state or two that has it, 200 provisions. But unless you make those subsections relate to the time of the presumption and relate to the time of driving, you haven't anything but presumption of the time he takes the test. But you then go back into the relation back problem. And I think this is a good concept. We need it.
Questions on 354.
I want to be sure of the amendment you suggest. Line 13, is it then, T-H-E-N, that you want to strike?
Yes.
On line 13, and then the same on all the others.
On line 25, you would delete the words, two words, has been is what was.
And on line 13, you should strike them. Is that right?
Right.
And what else?
In line 14, after liquor, make a comma and write the words at the time of arrest.
And then, yeah, any place else?
Line 17,
same thing.
Delete the word van, T-H-E-N,
mm-hmm.
And add the end comma at the time of arrest.
And same on line 20?
On line 19, delete the word van.
Yeah.
And line 20, add the word that comma at the time of arrest.
Yeah. That's going to make words on line 25.
Correct. And at the end of that, comma at the time of arrest.
What other bills did you wish to speak to?
I have one other. Senate Bill 570. The proposed addition or amendment to 483644, subsection 3. Our office supports that addition as written. However, this bill is here on this particular subsection. This 483644 has been one of the
most substantial problem areas in our prosecution. Number one, in subsection one, we propose to add the same license, same language that we talked about in Senate Bill 563 to allow the same people to analyze blood, urine, breath, and saliva as allowed under 48368. That's because the numerous times we've had the problem for instance, a doctor in a laboratory of a hospital that has not sought and asked for a permit from the Board of Health doesn't have one. So if he analyzed the blood, we can get the blood in, the blood result in, but we have to bring then another expert, or say a chemist in a hospital laboratory analyzes the blood. We can get the blood test in, but we have to then call in a doctor or a pathologist to tell what that blood test reading means, because we cannot have the presumption instruction. And that really kind of a burden, an anomalous type of situation where, if so long as the person is qualified and we have to qualify them under the rules of court, there is no reason why the presumption shouldn't apply the same as they do for the defendant.
Well, except for the last technician might not be qualified to testify to the effect of it as a doctor.
Well, I'm not talking about now, Senator Burns, him testifying to the effect, but under 483-644, subsection 1, as it's currently written, a person has to have a permit from the State Board of Health to analyze these things before these presumptions under 683-642 can be given to the jury. And if the person's qualified to analyze blood, he's qualified to analyze blood under the law. So there's no reason why those instructions shouldn't be given if you're required to lay a foundation of quality, the qualifications of the person to analyze, and you get the result in. Then the presumption should apply. It's an extra step to call in as a doctor to say what that test means. When you've got the presumption, it's already in the statute.
How would you amend that then? Our
proposed amendment would be, after the word health, State Board of Health, to delete the word end and add the words by a licensed physician and surgeon, comma, licensed professional nurse or qualified technician, comma, chemist or other qualified person. Now in subsection 2 of that same statute, we've had cases now are being thrown out of court all over the state because of a district court ruling that started in Multnomah County with a pro tem judge that rules what they were talking about in this subsection 2.
Subsection 2 what?
Subsection 2 of ORS 483-644.
Yeah, well, which letter? A, B, C?
A is the present time. The court ruled that what all of subsection 2 was referring to, that the officer's permit to run the breathalyzer machine had to require all of the 13 procedural steps for running the machine. We've got two circuit court judges in Multnomah County to rule the other way. We've got one judge in Multnomah County ruling against us. And all over the state, we've got people writing to us for our opinions because the courts are throwing out the breath test results because the officer's permit didn't have the 13 procedural steps for running the machine. It was our contention that what this law is talking about is the chemical analysis and not how to turn a button and so forth. So we propose an amendment of subsection A after the word blood to add the words and approve equipment to be used for any breath test technique or method of analysis.
Okay.
subsection B relating to the same problem, but to continue the clarification, after the word in, police officers in, we propose the addition of the word, the operation of equipment approved by the State Board of Health. Four. And delete the word, approved methods and techniques of chemical analysis.
All right.
And add the words there right after that, the approved breath test method or technique of chemical analysis.
Go ahead.
In subsection D, along the same with the same type of clarification, after the semicolon after the word, add the words, and issue permits to them according to their qualifications, period. In subsection E, along the same idea, delete the words, issue permits to individuals according to their qualifications, and delete the words, shall be issued, and delete the word after officers, in line 3, the word only, and delete the two words in line 5, methods end, and add the word thereafter, the word approved.
Well, yeah, fairly complicated amendments. If you would write them out, please, we'd appreciate receiving them.
I have it written out, but I didn't know I was going to be here today, so I only have the one.
All right, well, if you'll leave them with the clerk, she'll duplicate them so that we can look at them.
Now, those added language and deletions, is that total subsection 2 is relating to clarifying the idea that the things that the Board of Health is giving permits to is the policeman to operate particular machines, and the chemical analysis is a different subject matter because he doesn't qualify people. And that really has given a tremendous amount of problem all over the state, and especially in our lower court.
Thank you, Mr. Conn. Phil Roberts.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I am Phil Roberts, coordinator for the Oregon District Attorneys Association, and I'll be brief because some of my points have already been covered by Mr. Conn. Okay, if I can recall the numbers now. 354 is the one in which he submitted some amendments orally a few moments ago. The District Attorneys Association supports those same amendments. In fact, I have somebody in the Department of Justice who's supposed to be typing them, and I will have them to you in writing in the next day or so. That's the one that relates to the breath test within 2 hours after arrest, yeah. And those amendments are simply clarified. Okay, so we are in favor of that bill with those amendments. 570, we favor. We have not had a chance to look over the amendments that Mr. Conn has suggested, and I don't really know what all of they do. If the clarification is fine, we do support what the bill in its written form does, and that's add a subsection 3 to that statute providing for presumption of accuracy of breathalyzers. Now, Bill 563 is the one that was submitted by the District Attorneys Association. Subsection 1 of that bill does not maintain the existing law, and that's I want to clarify that because apparently that's an error in somebody's reading of it. It does not maintain the existing law, or it's not supposed to. Subsection 1 is as drafted, was drafted with the intent of providing a specific exception to the existing law. The existing law prohibits use of evidence of a refusal of a breath test. We drafted an exception which would say that prohibition does not apply in things like negligent harm cases. This is specifically to avoid the effect of the Annan case. And I assume the committee knows what the Annan case was, in which the Court of Appeals held that in a negligent homicide prosecution, the defendant had been arrested for DUIL, and he had refused the breath test, and then they charged him with negligent homicide and took a blood test over his objection, I believe. The Court of Appeals held that blood test could not be used against him in a negligent homicide prosecution because the implied consent law said that he had a right to refuse, and that right to refuse would prevent the use of that evidence for any purpose. So the purpose of subsection 1, whether it accomplishes it or not is another question, but I believe it does, would be to provide an exception to that particular law to cover the Annan case. Now, at this point, we would prefer that the subsection which prohibits comment on recusal breath tests be entirely eliminated. That is subsection 3 of, what is it, ORS 463640, I believe. I'm not sure of the number. We would prefer that that be entirely eliminated, and that is what House Bill 2901 would do. Mr. Kahn just mentioned 2901 as a bill that has been submitted by the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office and was the subject of a hearing this afternoon in alcohol and drugs. That bill would accomplish it, and if that bill goes through, fine. If that bill, however, does not go through, we would like to see the same thing accomplished through 563. So our first recommendation to the committee would be that subsection 1 of 563 be amended to completely delete the section which now gives a prohibition against commenting on it on a defendant's refusal to take the breath test. And I will try to submit that to you in written form so that you can see exactly what we want the bill to say. However, if the committee is hesitant to do that because it thinks that may be too drastic a step, then we would submit the bill as presently written in the hopes that this would at least provide an exception so that we could maybe get a little further than we can at the present time. Now, as far as subsection 2 of 563 is concerned, we do concur with Mr. Kahn's recommendation that that language be expanded to include all of the people who could do the blood test for the defendants, that those same people be allowed to do it for the state, which includes a few more people than were originally placed, and I don't think they all got included, but they should be in this draft.
Fine. Questions of Mr. Robbins? Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Informally, I have scheduled a meeting for Thursday night on Senate Bill 80. No? Okay. That sounds like not very possible. When do you want to have it?
Next week.
Sure. Can't we, at our next meeting, take a couple of positions on it? Make an attempt to take a couple of positions on Senate Bill 80 and maybe satisfy some of our problems.
Well, what do you mean, drop them in the hat?
No, I need to take some time during our next meeting to talk about Senate Bill 80.
Well, I know a lot of us have individual thoughts.
Well, that may be correct.
I know Dick had one thing he wants to put in it, and what I'm trying to ascertain is that everybody has a lot of things they want to do, so it is going to be a long time.
You know, my view is that we should consider Senate Bill 80 within the ambit of the objections raised on the floor and deal with search and seizure and deal with bail, and then refer it back out to the floor.
That's my feeling. Those were the two objections. However, I know Dick has the other thing in mind, and more or less, do you have something different, Bob?
Well, I'm sure that there are other points, but those are the two things I know.
Search and seizure and bail.
I'm sure there's some other items.
Well, but the question is, shall we limit it to those two articles?
Oh, I don't think you can do that. It was a wide open referral.
Yeah, it was.
But the committee, I thought as far as the chair was, there are really some hang-ups in the committee on other parts of the bill, too.
I gathered you.
Well, I'm not sure what the chairman has in mind.
Well, you said you want to put plea bargaining on the record.
Oh, yeah. That's a simple amendment. Either yes or no, I just been debating myself here. I really intended to go over to the House to try to get them added.
Well, amendments I have are simple, too.
Or yes or no.
Yes or no.
Well, I think it does. In other words, we've had some bills here about commuting sentences because they aren't in harmony with the new law. And you spoke up, well, how about a pusher that got jailed on possession
that got hooked?
He's already hooked, but he just got the thing of it is, if these things are on the record, you know whether there was plea bargaining or whether the guy really was a pusher or not.
Were you lobbying him?
No, I'm trying to stick up for you. Because I know what you didn't like about the other bill. And I think that ought to be on the record. And that's it's good. It's either yes or no. You like
well,
it or no.
I sure want y'all to get your income tax in. We're adjourned.
Or your extension.
Or your extension.